This is Forces Radio.
This is BFBS.
Never in the field of human combat.
The Forces Network.
So much hope.
Celebrating.
By so many.
RAF 100.
100. To show you.
RAF 100. Wings over Cyprus.
The year is 1968. Harold Wilson is Prime Minister. Manchester United have become the first English winners of the European Cup. The average house price is £3,903, and this was in the top 10.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth.
1968 also saw the Royal Air Force mark the 50th anniversary of its formation.
To celebrate the occasion, our predecessors created radio documentaries following six of the squadrons that were based at RAF Akrotiri.
Wings over Cyprus. We present the history of No. 6 Squadron, Royal Air Force, Akrotiri.
Of the six squadrons featured in Wings Over Cyprus, three are still operational today.
Now, in 2018, we are finding out where those squadrons are on the centenary of the Royal Air Force and how that compares to their early beginnings documented in our archives.
Military aviation was pioneered by a group of enthusiastic amateurs who were regarded by the newspapers as intrepid, but by many senior officers as scallywags, shirking the responsibilities of real soldiering. Against this background, No. 6 Squadron was formed at Farnborough on the 31st of January, 1914.
We had barely formed as a squadron before the war broke out. The squadron was immediately denuded of aircraft and personnel to reinforce 2, 3, 4 and 5 squadrons to allow them to go to the front in strength.
Despite these early setbacks, the squadron was finally formed, and on October the 4th, prepared to fly across the channel.
My engine started spluttering when I was over the channel and I thought I was in for a wetting. It picked up, though, and I landed at 3 o'clock in a field just outside Bruges. Saw five brigades of infantry going through to the front. The men were tired, but very cheerful. Heavy guns followed them through later. I'm sure the war can't last long. Most people think we'll be back in Blighty by Christmas.
How wrong this comment proved to be. The war dragged on.
November the 1st. Dropped hand bombs on German troops near Lille. Horses pulling guns showered with darts. Very effective. Horses reared up and rushed off the road, turning over the guns as they panicked.
First blood to the squadron today. Drove down a Fokker near Saint-Omer.
By now, even blimpish senior officers saw the value of the flying machine as a weapon of war. Six Squadron's duties expanded rapidly, and soon they were undertaking tactical reconnaissance, photography, trench mapping, and artillery observation using for the first time a wireless link with the ground.
Flying machines are still a weapon of war in 2018, and they are more sophisticated than ever.
Six Squadron is one of the Royal Air Force's five frontline Typhoon squadrons, and these days we're a multi-role squadron, so we do a lot of air-to-surface work as well as air defence. Most of the squadron do about 6 months of the year away from home. And through all of that time, we're conducting quick reaction alerts in the north of Scotland and also in the Falkland Islands in the South Atlantic.
That's Officer Commanding 6th Squadron, Wing Commander Billy Cooper. Today, the squadron are based at RAF Lossiemouth, but they've also been on Exercise Red Flag, sharing US training resources in Las Vegas, providing pilots for NATO air policing in Romania, known as Op Biloxi, and in the Middle East, conducting heavy weapons training in Oman and cementing historic relationships in Jordan. Much of that is training in preparation for their frontline role, conducting counter-Daesh operations.
It is fascinating for us to see that on the actual day of the 100th anniversary of the Royal Air Force, we'll be flying operational missions over Iraq and Syria, flying probably two pairs in the morning and another pair in the evening, conducting close air support and air presence missions. Nothing will be let up for the engineers. They'll still be working 12-hour shifts just to make sure those aircraft are ready.
Coordinating the shifts of engineers is Senior Engineering Officer Chris Harris.
If we look back to where 6th Squadron was 50 years ago, it would have been a lot more rigors, people looking after the structure of the aircraft. Now, it's all about the weapon system. So getting the aircraft over the target is only half the problem now. We're down to a single seat, so you've only got one person needing to manage masses of information. Everything electronic that's sucked up from the aircraft, your radar, your forward-looking infrared, and it's now shown on his cockpit and in his helmet. So all this information is presented to him, which takes a lot of computing power.
It's clear that a lot has changed, but what would the aircrew today make of the experiences of their forebears?
To find out, we played them this account from the archives, recorded in 1968. 84-year-old
John Eddington, the oldest surviving member of the squadron, recalls those earlier days.
Chief memory and difference between flying then and flying now is that we really were flying. We were in open cockpits, which was most exhilarating. It's impossible to describe the feeling of the wind in your face and the complete and freedom. You know, claustrophobia with that. Whereas with modern day, with closed cockpits, I don't think there's any fun in flying at all.
There's definitely fun in flying. It's just the sort of flying we do now is very different to perhaps what we were doing when this squadron was formed.
I'd say it was the improvement in the performance of aircraft these days. I mean, he won't be able to imagine what it is like doing Mach 1.8 at 55,000 feet. He will never experience that. Jets have progressed. The envelope has opened up for more fun flying.
Do you know, I met a Hurricane pilot who lived in the next village to me when I was flying Jaguars at the time. And he described his experience. He left after the Second World War. So then I was left telling him my stories about Jaguars. And he just looked at me and went, but all you do is training. I don't get it. You just do training. So that's what is so good about coming out to Cyprus now for 6th Squadron, is we're going out on operations and we're carrying out weaponeering. We're doing what we've been trained to do. And it's quite challenging. You never know what you're going to get when you cross the border into Syria or Iraq, or what's going to happen, what you're going to watch, what you're going to be involved in. So now we are back to going to operations again. So we don't have that just training for training's sake. What do I think about flying in an open cockpit? I think that's definitely what you're used to. Take a convertible car, it annoys the hell out of me. I want to put the roof up. So I'm quite happy in my comfortable cockpit without my wind being blown everywhere. I think that's not such a bad thing. Close that window.
It's weird because you think that he's talking about experimental aircraft, and then you think of what Typhoon is now, and it started out as an experimental aircraft, whereas now the Typhoon won't allow us to spin. We can't depart control the aircraft anymore.
Those safety developments are a world away from the experimental experiences of the first few to fly.
6th Squadron's beginnings predate the formation of the Royal Air Force, meaning their earliest accolades lie in the First World War.
Early in 1915, the first germ of fighter command was born. The Germans had started to intercept us in the air, and we fired our pistols at each other in the hope that our shots would strike the pilot or some vital part of the machine. Later, we fitted Lewis guns, far more effective.
To No. 6 Squadron went the honour of the first Victoria Cross for aerial combat. The citation in the London Gazette on the 24th of August 1915 read,
"To Captain L.G. Hawker, for the most conspicuous bravery and very great ability on 25th of July 1915. When flying alone, he attacked three German aeroplanes in succession. The personal bravery shown by this officer was the very highest order, as the enemy's aircraft were armed with machine guns and all carried a passenger as well as a pilot."
The war ended, and there came a period of recession during which most of the serving squadrons were either disbanded or reduced to cadre strength. It is 6th Squadron's proud boast that it is the only one of the original 7 squadrons never to have been disbanded or reduced to cadre.
Sixth Squadron did eventually disband. They do, however, hold the record for being the longest continuously serving squadron.
That's a record that's unlikely to ever be broken, and one of which they're very proud, including Engineering Warrant Officer Richard, a.k.a. Elsie.
Sixth Squadron were the longest serving squadron until they disbanded in 2007 at Coningsby with Jaguars. We reformed in 2009 with Typhoon at Coningsby before moving to Lucas in 2010. We stood up as a squadron in 2011 at Lucas before moving to Lossiemouth in 2014, which is where we're currently based.
Shift rectification controller Graham has worked on two of the airframes that 6th Squadron have operated, the Typhoon now and the Jaguars pre-disbandment.
From a mechanical point of view, which is my base trade, a lot of the systems are quite similar. Obviously, they're far more advanced on Typhoon, and the jet actually helps us a little bit more when it comes to looking at faults, but the similarity surprised me, I have to say, when I come to Typhoon. But aeroplanes are still aeroplanes, they still bleed and break, and things go wrong with them, and then we fix them.
Acuteri, approach, good afternoon, 3 flight on handover, 7 Frontal 120.
When you see one of these aircraft come in at the end of the sortie, it's beautiful to watch. It's like a Formula One hit team. They are in there straight away. You'll see the armourers taking off any weapons for the roll change, putting on the latest bombs. You'll see the young AMMs going in doing their servicing, so they'll be looking at the fuels, the oils. You see a station come in and help you, so they turn up with their barriers to give you the new fuel. And then you'll have your mechanics and your avionics downloading the jet, finding out any systems that might have failed in flight and moving around. It's poetry seeing these 3-4 different teams all moving around the aircraft, and they get it all done in such a small time. It's just beautiful.
All right, sir, how was the flight?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Back safe, that's the main thing. Thanks. Thank you.
At the end of the war, we spent a pleasant 6 months in France doing communications and photographic work. In April of 1919, we were somewhat surprised when we received orders to depart for Basra. We dismantled our RE8s, known to all and sundry as Harry Tates, and sailed east on April the 14th.
Dear Rosie, it ain't our fault here. All there is flies and sand, and we've all had the fever. All them lovely women you hears about is lies, unless the sheik keeps them locked up in his blooming palace.
We stayed at Basra until 1921. At this time, it was decided that the RAF was to become the controlling influence in the Middle East. We could cover in 2 hours as much as the army chaps could in a week.
The squadron moved to Kurdistan, where it quelled rebellions and minor wars which flared up with monotonous regularity. It also took photographs of the area for the Lands Commission.
In 1931, we replaced our aging aircraft with Gordon's and moved to Ismailia. We were now designated to the bomber role. Re-equipped with Hawker Hearts, Demons and Hardy light bombers, we saw our first serious action on the 26th of June.
On patrol from Assam, saw 6 Arabs carrying a coffin. They dropped it as I flew over and fired at me, hitting the aircraft near the tail. I returned fire, but not sure if I hit them.
The squadron became increasingly proficient in this type of war and scored heavily against the Arabs. The enemy, however, became equally proficient.
Whilst escorting Jewish convoy along the Tolkham-Nublis road, Arabs attacked the vehicles from both sides. The squadron went down and strafed them, meeting heavy and accurate small arms fire. 3 of our aircraft were forced to land, and others were badly hit.
The gallantry of the squadron was unquestionable during this period. In all, a total of 4 DSOs, 8 DFCs, 7 DFMs and 2 OBEs were awarded, together with 13 mentions in dispatches, an award record unsurpassed by any other squadron in a time of so-called peace.
The squadron's gallantry is still unquestionable, but the dangers are ever evolving. With more than 20 years flying experience and having recently returned to the RAF, Squadron Leader Duff has noticed the difference.
Yeah, so I flew the Jaguar 6 Squadron, where we were very happy in Coleshaw, which is in Norfolk, going on detachment to fly over northern Iraq on Operation Northern Watch. We got shot at in those days, so I remember one report where I counted 15 airbursts all around my cockpit. In fact, some days you'd go back and you hadn't been shot at, and you'd be sort of slightly disappointed that the Iraqis weren't playing that day. Whereas now we find it's a much more benign environment. We're not being shot at, but the stakes are much higher. Crashing in Saddam's Iraq was probably survivable. It's a different place now.
While much of RAF Akrotiri prepares to go to bed, a pair of typhoons depart for their night's mission. Every one of the pilots keenly feels the importance of the job at hand.
So 6th Squadron's got quite a lot of history in the Middle East, especially in Iraq. To be back again is quite surreal, I think, for a squadron to come back to the same place a full, 70 or 80 years after they first sort of visited. Back on the squadron, there's a picture of the squadron overflying the hills around Mosul in two aircraft. And it's really nice to think that we're following in our ancestors' steps, providing safety and security to the people who live in Iraq.
When the squadron aren't deployed to carry out these missions, they may well be away from home preparing for them. It's important for those taken to the air, but also those who stay behind on the ground.
When you're putting a live bomb on that aircraft and it's come back, no one's left under any doubt of how serious our mission is. And it is an unfortunate fact that people will die as a result of our mission. But you do know you are moving for the better of the world, the better of UK. So the guys do take an interest in that, and they get to see the video footage afterwards. And that's an important part of this as well, so understanding what we are doing is right. And they're proud to be here delivering operations for the UK. And you see that pride in every one of them as they carry out their job.
The main aim of all the training that we do is to replicate as closely as we can the experiences that we have on operations, so that when the pilots cross over the border for the first time and find themselves dropping live weapons on people, they've already understood in their minds the importance and the seriousness of what it is they're doing. We always make sure that all the pilots have actually dropped a live weapon beforehand, just so they've experienced the sensation of the weapon leaving the aircraft. And we have a lot of conversations about the difficult position we can be in on occasions when we have to take life. A couple of weeks ago, I was flying with one of the junior pilots on the squadron, and he had not led an operational sortie as being the leader of the formation beforehand, and he'd only flown two or three missions over the border previously. It was a really busy time on the tanker. The weather conditions were very challenging, and as soon as we came off the air-to-air refueling aircraft and straight into the operating airspace, we were immediately into dropping weapons into a building containing Daesh fighters. And just to see the way that he conducted himself, for me as a squadron commander in particular, it's obviously a fantastic experience to watch the guys develop and grow and then see it come to its sort of full fruition by conducting in that way on operations.
The FBS. RAF 100. Wings over Cyprus. 6th Squadron.
In 1939, we flew our last patrols in the faithful old aircraft which had served us so well, and received in their place the modern Lysander. The Germans attacked Poland in the autumn, and we all felt war was inevitable.
1941, May the 2nd. The last few days have been hell. We've been shelled, strafed, and yesterday attacked by 22 dive bombers.
Becoming increasingly more difficult to operate. Serviceability very bad. Spares an acute problem. Morale is high, but Lord knows why.
With an environment more benign than that of their forefathers, what are today's biggest challenges? According to 6th Squadron, it's the length of their sorties.
To keep going for the whole hours, you tend to find that when you get to the end of it and you take your helmet off and you step out of the cockpit, that you just are shattered and you start almost stumbling back to the ops room to sign the jet in. And then after that, you sit down. Oh, I want to go to sleep. Just want to have a rest. Very tired.
As well as the airmen, an aircraft can also be worn out after a mission.
The long sortie means that the life of the aircraft is getting consumed so much faster. So in the UK, we might have four or five sorties before we have to do a certain component change. In here, that's happening almost every sortie or every other sortie.
Tiredness and spare parts aside, the long sortie has one final sting in its tail.
I totally messed up my pee bag issue. So we take three with us. I take three because I'm getting old a bit. And I can quite often do a normal 6-hour flight without using one. So I got to sort of 6 hours thinking, no, actually, it's about time. But I'd waited far too long and actually had a volume issue. It's probably the best way to describe that. Got right to the top. Anyway, it was very difficult given the confined space. So yeah, I've had some fun today.
Forces Radio. BFBS. Wings over Cyprus.
Six Squadron's aircraft, which were far from airworthy, continued to fly in support of the army. The squadron's motto, Oculi Exercitus, the eyes of the army, was proudly fulfilled despite the apparent hopelessness of the situation.
Jubilation! The boss has just heard that we are to withdraw to Tel Aviv to rest and recoup. The advance party leaves tomorrow.
That night, the squadron commander wrote in his diary,
Thus ends Six Squadron's first epic of the war. The whole squadron has acquitted themselves well. Time and again we have received congratulatory messages from the army, and praise from them is praise indeed. We have received a case of champagne from General Wavell, together with a letter written in his own hand. The joy of withdrawing to Tel Aviv is lessened by the thought of those that have died in recent weeks, but no doubt we will be back to pay off our score with Jerry.
The eyes of the army, yet Oculi Exercitus, obviously stems from the time the squadron's birth, when we were very much supporting the artillery, which is pretty much what all the squadrons were doing at that time, just immediately prior to the birth of air-to-air fighting. Sixth Squadron also has the record of being the first squadron to conduct any air-to-ground communications, which is actually a piece of paper that was dropped to the army on the ground. And I can't remember the exact wording, but it's something like, well done, you hit them, going home now, no fuel.
Why haven't you got the nickname the Posties?
Eyes of the Army wasn't the only nickname given to Sixth Squadron, but the other is the cause of some debate.
Yeah, so there's quite a big bone of contention that some people describe the squadron as the flying tin openers, and some describe the squadron as flying can openers, opening the cans, which would be the tanks on the ground. Today, we still have a cannon, but we're mostly using Paveway 4s to stop ISIS and their war of terror against the people of Iraq. So it's a little bit different as to how we're delivering the can opening, but it's definitely still happening.
We're very fortunate on 6th Squadron that the Squadron Association is a very lively association, and the newsletter that they produce is called the Tin Opener, whereas we refer to ourselves as the Can Openers.
BFBS. RAF 100. Wings over Cyprus. 6th Squadron.
The squadron, re-equipped with Hurricane 2Ds, moved back into the western desert and was soon in action.
18th of June 1942 saw a column of tanks and troop carriers advancing on Sidi Rezegh, southwest of Tobruk. Gave them all I had and left 18 of them blazing furiously.
We became increasingly more proficient in tank busting, and it was at this time that the boys suggested that we should paint winged can openers on the aircraft tails as a very fitting squadron emblem.
Our job changed somewhat when we got into Italy. Targets were many and various: radar stations, gun emplacements, ships, anything that was German, in fact.
We moved on steadily right the way up the Adriatic to Yugoslavia and continued operational flying up until 6 days before the end of the war. Strangely, our last victory was achieved without firing a shot.
Made a dummy attack on 16 troop ships sailing in convoy. The leading ship raised a white flag, but had second thoughts and lowered it again. However, quickly raised it once more as we turned to attack, as did all the others.
So the war ended, and in July 1945, the squadron once more moved south.
The post-war years were years of constant change. Like desert Bedouins, we ranged all over the Middle East: Shalufa, Khartoum, Aden, Habanya, Shaiba, and so on.
On the 6th of April 1956, we moved to Akrotiri to enjoy the longest period of permanence known in the squadron's history. A year later, we discarded our fighter role, and since that time, we have flown the Canberra bomber. We can look back on 54 years packed with honour and excitement. We are proud to be of 6th Squadron. Very proud.
From then until now, 6th Squadron are noisier than ever and still call Cyprus a home away from home.
I went to the station history room at St. Paul's Church to have a look around there and see actually that 6th Squadron is still remembered by the station. It's a bit disappointing that they still don't have a permanent presence in Cyprus. I'd love to live out here.
Well, there's nowhere you'd rather be than at the cutting edge of what the entire service delivers on such an important anniversary.
It's got more dilapidated until this visit. This visit is the first time I've seen newer things, but it's amazing, the same personalities are still here, the same mess staff are still there, and that's going back 25 years.
It's just fitting for the 100th anniversary of the RAF and 6-1 being here 50 years ago. It's fitting that we're here today conducting airstrikes.
We undertook this project knowing it would be fascinating to compare where 6th Squadron are today, 50 years on from where our colleagues documented their histories. But where do the current squadron members see the RAF's future across the next 50 years?
It's a hugely exciting time and we've got a lot going on in our future. 6th Squadron is the lead squadron for developing Storm Shadow, so that's moving on to Typhoon. We've also just had the latest radar update. And this is a huge step change in where we're delivering. We're constantly moving the aircraft forward to be at the cutting edge, and it's phenomenal to work with.
It's just completely different from where we started. And in 50 years, probably won't even be a pilot in the cockpit. Probably won't even be using fuel.
The Typhoon could still be flying in 50 years. Wouldn't be surprised. The Tornado's pretty old. And 6th Squadron will still be doing what it's doing.
50 years from now, the mind boggles as to what 6th Squadron might be doing. I think, given 6th Squadron's history, that it will still be going in some guise. Whatever it's doing, I'm quite sure that the ethos and the camaraderie that we have on the squadron will still be as strong as it is now.
Wings Over Cyprus was written and narrated by Arthur Stagg and produced by Kathy Emmett in the Episcopi Studios.
Wings Over Cyprus! The RAF 100 edition was produced and presented by Jade Calloway
and Jess Bracey at the RAF Akrotiri Studios.
On digital radio, FM and satellite TV in the UK.
Online and on air around the world.
This is Forces Radio, BFBS.